Well, in Afghanistan, more than 1,000 troops have fled to neighbouring Tajikistan as the Taliban has made sweeping advances across the northern region. Violence has risen in recent weeks, particularly in the north of the country. The surge comes as American, British and allied forces, including Australian forces, withdraw after 20 years there on the ground. Bilal Sawawi is a freelance journalist in Afghanistan. Bilal, welcome back to Breakfast.
It's good to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Bilal, we read this morning that 1,000 Afghan troops have fled across the border into Tajikistan to save their own lives, is how it was described. Can you explain what's happening there?
Yeah, we saw almost 16 districts falling in the province of Takhar, all of the districts in that province on the border with Tajikistan. Then we saw 25 districts falling in the neighboring province of Badakhshan. These are two very strategic provinces deep in northeastern Afghanistan. Both of them share a border with Tajikistan, but Badakhshan also shares a border with China. A lot of these members of the security forces really, you know, fled to Tajikistan, fearing the Taliban will not spare them. You're talking often about village district level grievances and the need for revenge among different sides. But these two provinces are also quite crucial because they were ANDSF providing provinces and home to lapis lazuli mine, gold mines, salt and coal mines. So extremely precious resources. But what is even more worrying as a trend is the massive, fall of territory, districts, the mass surrenders often negotiated by village and tribal elders. And you're talking about a security force that has been fighting, you know, for years. So there's fatigue, there's low morale, and maybe perhaps some of these village district level commanders and leaders and even community leaders decided, well, we have to take our own insurance. We are the ones who have to live with the Taliban in our own villages and districts. And why should we be fighting when the Americans are leaving?
It's from this distance that looks interesting, isn't it? Because one of the reasons why coalition forces, including Australian forces, we're always led to believe were over there was to help train the Afghan forces. If we've trained the Afghan forces, but they're fleeing as the Taliban sort of, you know, fronts up or muscles up, it looks as though that job wasn't done very well. That's one factor, I suppose. So what was all that effort for? It makes us look as though the last 20 years wasn't worth much if the Afghan force really is in no shape to take over. Is that what we're seeing here, that it's in no shape or in no state of mind to take over?
I think, to be fair to the Afghan National Security Forces, they have been fighting at least 2-3 years of, very, very confusing periods. When the Americans got into negotiations with the Taliban, they sold those talks in Doha as peace talks. They said that the Taliban will agree to meaningful peace talks, that they will agree to a ceasefire. And the Afghan government was actually, forced to release 6,000 Taliban leaders and fighters and commanders. Most of them went back and really started going after village district level police chiefs, judges, prosecutors. I think if you look back to the last 20 years, there's a catalog of errors. I think there was corruption within the National Security Forces. There was a lot of incompetence. But it is also true that Afghan National Security Forces were dealing with the Taliban, which had and enjoyed the support of Pakistani military and intelligence services. Mm. So over the last 20 years, the Taliban became extremely potent as an insurgency, not only support coming from Pakistani army and intelligence, they also had support from Iran. And then they got, a lot of recognition in a place like Doha. So, the Taliban as an insurgency has also evolved. They've been quick to adopt Al-Qaeda, according to Afghan counterterrorism, really taught the Taliban to come up with, deadly truck bombs, roadside bombs. These days, even they fly those commercial drones attaching ammunition to them. So,
So they're well-resourced. They're well-resourced. How much, you talked about district-level skirmishes here that we're talking about in the north, but how much territory does the Taliban now control? Because under the deal struck with the Taliban, the US and NATO allies agreed to withdraw troops in return for a commitment by the Taliban not to allow extremist groups to operate in areas they control, but they didn't agree to stop fighting Afghan forces, as we've seen. So how much country is now in control of the Taliban?
Well, since the Americans announced that they were withdrawing militarily in May, at least 160 districts have fallen. I have been keeping a close count, speaking to many different people across the country here in Kabul. Now, you don't only talk about territory. You talk about, you know, soldiers, thousands of them really surrendering and others defecting. But you also have ammunition and armored vehicles. So I think that is something we can be certain of. There are areas.
So what does that sort of amount to, Bilal? Sorry to interrupt you, but 160 districts. Are we talking about, you know, what sort of area? A half of the country, a third of the country, less than that?
Well, there are closer to 400 districts, so one third. But you're talking about hundreds and thousands of Afghans, villages, districts, you know, valleys and hamlets. And I think that is the tragic part, that the Afghan people are not only displaced by the recent fighting, but the fighting also takes place at the peak of the fruit and food harvest season. The poor of the poorest, the Afghan farmers, have been, you know, impacted. And this pain and this agony, I think, continues to really cause a lot of pain among, you know, ordinary Afghans across the country, be it in a city like Kabul, a highway, a village, or some mountainous remote valley.
What is happening in Kabul? Is there any thought that the Taliban will move or has the strength or capacity to move on Kabul?
Well, we heard from Chairman Abdullah Abdullah speaking very bluntly at a meeting with President Ghani and other Afghan politicians, saying that if the Afghan politicians and those responsible for the country did not come together and, you know, created a united front, then Afghanistan's security was at risk. He clearly stated the Taliban were at the gates of Kabul. And Kabul is a city now, which, you know, is not only very insecure, you have targeted killings, but neighboring provinces are also changing hands, you know, at least they are surrounded, they're besieged. So for some Afghans, it does bring the historical fears of the 1989-1990s, especially when you have constant attacks against electricity, against Afghan infrastructure, when you have Afghans lining for fuel, at least those who could afford it. You're also talking about the third and deadly wave of the COVID-19 pandemic, where, you know, oxygen, which should usually cost $4, is now $300. There are no beds in hospitals in Kabul where people can be treated. So unfortunately for Afghanistan, you know, all the problems have really multiplied all at once.
Can I just ask you briefly, Bilal, in Australia there are growing calls for Afghan interpreters who helped Australian troops in Afghanistan to be given asylum here. Not all have achieved that. How much danger do they face if they're not allowed to leave the country now that the Taliban's gaining ground?
I think the generation that was working with the international community, especially with Western militaries, face a massive risk. People quite tragically have gone and threatened people both here in Kabul and across the country. And you also have to, you know, talk about the Australian war crimes in a place like Uruzgan, which I followed very closely. So the Taliban in a place like Uruzgan and elsewhere, on and off, have been saying that they will make sure that justice is served, that they will make sure that Afghans who are working with Australians are brought into justice. So there are fears, and just look at the examples of all these targeted killings in some of the most secure parts of Kabul. And I know, speaking to few who had worked with the Australians in different capacities, they really feared that, because for every Afghan, there's another Talib from his or her village or district or tribe. So it's not very difficult for people, quite tragically, to tie things, or even only accusations are enough to cause a lot of problems.
All right, Bilal, thank you very much. I appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
Bilal Salawi is a freelance journalist in Afghanistan.